Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Doctor's Kitchen. Recipes, health, lifestyle.
We are going to experience this life once. And although people joke, oh, you can sleep when you're dead. Actually, I don't want to sleepwalk, you know, just walk around like a zombie who's too tired to live my life. I want to live my life. I want to experience it. I want to feel good. So that's what gets me up to bed early. And yeah, I'm so boring. I go to bed now at like 9:45.
Welcome to the Doctor's Kitchen podcast. Show about food, lifestyle, medicine, and how to improve your health today. I'm Dr. Rupi, your host. I'm a medical doctor, I study nutrition, and I'm a firm believer in the power of food and lifestyle as medicine. Join me and my expert guests where we discuss the multiple determinants of what allows you to lead your best life. I'm joined today by Adrian, who is a friend of mine, a leading wellness professional, TEDx speaker, podcast host, author, and marathon runner. Adrian is the epitome of the modern digital entrepreneur. Ever since I've known her, she's been a vibrant ball of energy who is just so motivating. I always feel happier after speaking to her or listening to her on her incredible weekly podcast, The Power Hour, where she dives into the first hour of the day with guests including celebrities like Trevor Nelson and Fern Cotton, Tom Daly, and myself. I've been on the podcast a couple of times. Her new book, Power Hour, is all about how to focus your goals and create a life you love. And on today's podcast, you will learn all about that Power Hour concept and the importance of a morning routine that I can certainly attest to. How to develop an empowered mindset and focus on achieving personal as well as professional goals. Top tips to improve sleep, which I certainly believe is the foundation for a fantastic day. And also how to develop your own power hour, whether it's diving with both feet in or in incremental steps. Now, we also have quite an honest discussion about excuses and taking control of your situation, which I hope is empowering regardless of what life has thrown at you. And Adrienne shares some of her own personal experiences. And I'm sure you'll find hearing about Adrienne's journey and story as motivating and inspiring as I do. Mate, love the book.
Yeah, awesome.
Got it.
I love it. You've had time to actually go through it because I know how.
I've sped read it. I'll be honest.
Yeah. So I know the sections. I love how you've like made it super clear, and you know you put things out, and you refer back to your guests and stuff on the pod, and it's incredible what you've been able to create with that, actually, because you've had such incredible guests. I'm not talking about myself. You've had such incredible guests, and to condense all that information into a book that's like super accessible, it's logical throughout it. You know, it's great. So I'm super proud for you and stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted it to be, you know, not that I underestimate people's, you know, intelligence, of course not, but I wanted it to be readable, digestible, and as you said, like often there's so much granularity on one topic that people kind of, they don't necessarily get you know, the takeaways or kind of actionable things. So although I've tried to cover so many things, you know, from habits to sleep, to movement, to network, I just kind of really wanted it to be simple. Like people can pick it up, you know, take one chapter at a time and go, actually, I can take something, maybe not all of it, but I can take something from each chapter and go, maybe I could give that a try. Maybe I could tweak that. It's not about changing your whole life. But I think a lot of people who've read that have said, actually, this is, yeah, it's quite clear and instructional. And I didn't ever want it to be preachy either, which, because I don't really like preachy self-development. So it's always that fine line between being motivated and encouraging and then being smug. And, you know, like no one likes that.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, that fine line between being motivational and encouraging versus being something that serves as like a bit of a negative thing to carry around, like you're not doing enough. And I think, you know, social media can exacerbate that feeling. I mean, I'm like that as well. Like in the spirit of vulnerability, I look through my feed and it conjures up a bit of anxiety because I look at how much other people are doing and I always think, oh my God, I need to be doing more. And this is coming from someone who, you know, has their own power hour that I've described on your pod twice and has, you know, developed even more, who, you know, has got loads of things going on, as do you. And if I have those feelings like I'm not doing enough, there must be so many other people who just think, you know, I'm not doing anything. Whereas actually, they could be an incredible parent, they could be an incredible student, you know, they could be an incredible friend. And that's what we need to value a lot more. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely. I think maybe a part of it is your personality as well, Rupi. You know, you're an incredible high achiever, and you wouldn't be if you didn't put that on yourself, that feeling of I want to achieve more. You know, you've studied, you're a doctor, you're an author, you're a podcaster. That's your choice. You choose to add those things because that's who you are, you know, whether it's A-type or high achieving, whatever you call it. I think, you know, you're one of those people. And I think I hear what you're saying about, you know, looking around and thinking, gosh, I'm not doing enough. This person's doing that. This person's doing that. Everyone seems to be doing it all. But I don't know. I tend to look at things in stages. You know, everything has seasons, you know, everything from the moon to the weather to this, you know, everything has seasons. And I look at my life in that way. So sometimes I'm like, this might be that season for me of whether it's career, whether it's family, whether it's training physically for an endurance marathon. Like, I have seasons and I'm okay with the natural ebbs and flows of those seasons. I don't have to do all of them all the time. And that's how I think about it when I look at what other people are doing too, because that might be their season where it's, you know, a sprint and it's just work, 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 work. Or it might be their season where they're, yeah, as you said, raising children and spending time with those children. So if you look at it in that way, you know, even though time is finite, you can kind of try to just, yeah, accept that whichever season you're in, that's where you're at right now. And actually with when it comes to the self-development thing as well, about constantly trying to improve yourself, like how can you be doing better, how can you be doing more, how can you optimize, how can you make everything more efficient, even in the same way, although that's pretty much all the books I read,
yeah.
I still have to apply that to that same thing of like, is this the season where I'm really working on this, or is this the season? Because we can't just we can't just continue to make everything better all the time. You know, things aren't linear. Sometimes it might zigzag and kind of go forwards, go backwards, go up, go down. But I just think it's a season.
Yeah, exactly. I remember the first time I met you, we were introduced via Zana, and just your energy is just so infectious. No wonder so many people listen to your podcast and just feel motivated and inspired by you. Have you always been that way? Has that been your personality when you were younger?
You know, it's interesting because a lot of people have asked me this recently, and when I really reflect, if I'm honest with you, I am one of four siblings. I'm one of the older siblings, and I took on a lot of responsibility at a young age. But my personality is such that I'm an extrovert. My whole family, we're all quite, you know, our house was very loud growing up. So I've definitely, yeah, I don't know, I just had an energy and a confidence and an extroverted personality always. But what I'd say about the kind of more optimistic and motivational kind of angle the viewpoint that I have on the world, it's actually from the opposite. So growing up with my mum, and growing up in a, you know, she was a single mum, four kids, she had a difficult life, and she felt like she didn't have agency or choices or options. And as a result, I think she very much felt like she was the victim of her life. She felt very, you know, angry, I guess, at certain situations or circumstances. And I think she felt very limited by her circumstances. So I guess I didn't necessarily know the language that, you know, that I would use to describe it now when I was 12 years old, but I probably felt this feeling of, you know, that was her situation. And I understand it was difficult, but she was very negative, very glass half empty, very, you know, the world's against you kind of energy. And it's very draining to be around. And it also, it's not helpful. It doesn't make your life better. It doesn't make the life of people around you any better. So I think at a very young age, I really understood how much our perspective informs our life and our decisions. You know, everyone, we all make choices every single day. You're only ever one choice away from changing your entire life for better or for worse. And I think growing up, I definitely thought, you know what, I don't want to. You can either focus on, you know, the perceived circumstance or disadvantages or barriers or whatever you think is holding you in this place, or you can focus on looking for the good, creating better for your future, but you can't do both. You cannot do both. So I think at a very young age, I was like, right, I'm going to choose to see the good. I'm going to choose optimism. I'm going to choose to go after whatever it is that I want to go after and get my hopes up. You know, people say like, don't get your hopes up. I used to think, why not? Get your hopes up. Because if it doesn't work out, if things don't go well, you're going to be disappointed. You'll get over it. But you're going to be disappointed either way if you don't get your hopes up. I just really didn't like that idea of don't get your hopes up or be realistic. It really didn't suit me. I was like, forget it. You know, you might not be able to see the opportunity in my life. You might not have very high expectation for me, for what I'm going to achieve in my life, but I'm not going to allow you to limit that because of the perspective. So as I say, I didn't have that language when I was 12, but I definitely think I grew up with an energy that was like, you know what? I'll choose to see the good.
You mentioned a word there that I wanted to pick up on, which was agency. And I wrote it down actually, because I think that's such an incredible point that I want to pick up on. It's this concept that you lack control and you don't have autonomy over how your life pans out. And you've dedicated a couple of chapters, which is related to this in the books, the mindset chapter and the purpose chapter. How do you cultivate, when you have that underlying feeling, and maybe it's the way you've been brought up in an environment where you feel that your choices have been limited for whatever reason, how do you actually go about step by step building that self-confidence and that mindset that you actually can break barriers regardless of what they are?
Yes, it's a really great question. And as you say, you know, I talk about this a lot, it's because it really means a lot to me for people to understand that where you start does not dictate where you finish. You know, I've seen that in my own life, but also in loads of people's lives. You know, we've read stories of people who've transformed and changed the trajectory of their entire life. And I do believe it starts with mindset. I think if you can really start to understand what is possible for yourself and for your life, you have to understand it and be able to believe that it's possible to then take the action and the steps to make it happen. So when you talk about agency, if you're in a situation, if you believe that you are limited because you're female or because, you know, the gender inequality, maybe it's because you're a woman of color or a person of color. Maybe it's because you didn't have the education or supportive parents, or you're overweight, you're obese. There's all of these different things that we will use as excuses or limitations. And I really, it's difficult to say that word, you know, to say the word excuses. People think, oh my gosh, that's such a hard thing to say. But I use that word when I'm talking to myself. You know, I'm saying, is this a barrier? Is this a perceived barrier? Is this an excuse? Because then it can let me off the hook. Because then I can say, well, it's not my fault, Rupee, because I didn't have that education, or I didn't have money growing up, or I'm a woman of color, so it's not my fault. But and it's not about assigning blame, because I, again, being careful that I'm not assigning blame to the person, But again, when it comes down to choice, what choice do you have? If that is your current situation and circumstance, it's not the reason that you can't succeed. It's just the parameters in which you must. You have to either change it and in the meantime, make the best of what you have got. That is all that you can do, because we know that life isn't fair. We know that we don't all start at the same place. That's just how it is. As much as it's, you know, we could argue about, you know, equality, or we could argue about all of these things. But the reality is that right now, where you are is where you are. And I often think that, you know, if you imagine like a this is quite a visual thing, but I'm quite a visual person. If you imagine like a car that's broken down and it's just stuck on the side of the road, it's not moving. You can just stay there and hope that someone comes along, drives past and just happens to see you and stop and help. Or you can get out and you can start to push. Now, when that car is still, getting that car started is going to feel impossible. It's going to be really, really, really hard. It's going to take every ounce of effort that you have. But once you've done the hardest bit, once it starts to move and you start to get a little bit of momentum and then it starts to go, then you just got to keep it going, keep it going, keep it going. And before you know it, you're on your way, you know? And it's kind of like that bit when you're stuck, when you feel stuck, it can be so overwhelming to think, this is it, you know, I can't do anything, I can't go anywhere. But as I come back to this thing of choice, I just think the alternative is so, again, going back to, you know, growing up with my mom, I just think the alternative, sadly, is just that you just stay there. You just remain in a place that is limited and you don't fulfill your potential. You don't get to experience the things in life that you deserve to. You don't get to be the best version of yourself if you choose to remain stuck.
It's a really interesting and tricky conversation to have, isn't it, at a public level, because on one side, you know, there are huge inequalities across life, you know, some that you mentioned, gender, race, financial well-being when you're younger, you know, all these things that are entrained into us. But on the other hand, really, if we're looking at how to liberate people from the limitations that they also put on themselves, as well as the other things that are very literal, you know, you have to give people the tools to be able to dig themselves out. And it requires a hard conversation. And I'm really glad that, you know, you're using that vernacular to explain how people can take control of their own mindset and then take control of their life, essentially. And it's, you know, you're living proof exactly of how you can do that, considering, you know, your background, your situations.
And one great place to start, essentially, with that, you know, where could you start, is actually, you mentioned about, you know, the labels that we, or the names or the labels that we sometimes are given by others and that we hold on to. So just think about when you're growing up and at school, you might be the sporty one or the academic one or the musical one. And even in our family, sometimes from our peers, from our siblings and parents, they might say, oh, you know, you've got a short temper, or she's always, I don't know, the sore loser, or too competitive, or too loud. You know, you get these labels. And sometimes I think that people grow up and they keep that on them, and it might not even be true anymore. Maybe when you were 7 years old, it was true, but maybe 20 years later, it's not true anymore, but you still have it somewhere, like stuck on you, like a sticker. So what I like to do is to encourage people to think and be really honest with themselves. What are the labels that you've been given in your life, positive or negative? And then, do they still apply today? Would you describe yourself in that way? You don't have to have them. It's your choice. Take them off and actually replace them. So I think about the words that I want to be, like the labels I wish I had or want to have. And that's who I'm becoming. And every day I think about my actions. I'm very intentional. I'm like, am I becoming these words? Because we're always becoming something, for better or for worse. So that's a good exercise to start with. Real simple. No one has to see it. You can just write it down. What are those labels? What are those words for you? Are they still true today? And if not, what are you going to replace them with?
I love that concept. Like, you know, if I could rewrite the labels for I'm just thinking about myself, you know, in my family, I was like the academic one, the one that would always just do the homework and, like, you know, try and get straight A's and all that kind of stuff. And obviously I went to medical school, so you needed that sort of, you know, background and foundation. But actually, when I look at myself now, I don't just want to be the academic one. I want to be the creative one. I want to be explorative when it comes to, you know, food and how I can use knowledge in a different way and a communicator. And I think if you'd asked me that when I was a teenager or even in my early 20s, I probably wouldn't have picked those because I wouldn't have thought that would have applied to me. So that's a really interesting tool. And it brings me to a point that I think I made on your last podcast as well about this whole concept of action boarding or visualizing. And I'm really into this now, like, you know, actually the words or the images. And like you, I'm quite a visual person as well. Like, I want to see what things I can create. Is that something that you do yourself on a daily basis?
Absolutely. You know what? I love visualization as well. And I don't think when I was growing up, you know, as a child, I didn't know it was called visualization. Maybe it's daydreaming, maybe it's whatever. But I used to get into bed at night, and before I went to bed, before I went to sleep, I would almost imagine my dream. So I would just lay in bed with my eyes closed and I would just imagine. So obviously I was visualizing. I didn't know it then. And I still do it now sometimes. I just honestly, I've got a smile on my face because if you know, I was listening to a podcast, I really can't remember who it was or what it was. It's so long ago, but it stuck with me. I was talking about the brain, you know, under an MRI scanner and talking about what happens in the brain when you ask someone in an MRI scan to visualize an apple and then to visualize the color and the texture and then to imagine taking a bite of the apple and like the parts of the brain that would trigger if you were actually biting an apple, you know, to produce saliva or taste or smell, they start to light up even though there's no apple. You're just laying there with your eyes closed. And then it also talked about the idea that no other animal that we know of on the planet has this conscious imagination. So they can't think about a concept of time. So your dog isn't thinking about next Thursday or the summer, you know, they're not thinking ahead, but we can. And I just thought how amazing when you think, you know, in you, for example, we've had the pandemic and no one's been able to go anywhere and do anything. And now people are starting to look ahead and book things and plan things. Just, you know, the idea that of booking a holiday, even though I'm not on the holiday, I'm already visualizing, you know, like what I'm going to wear, what I'm going to pack, even going to the airport and going to Pret. I am so excited for the whole trip, the whole trip. So even the anticipation and the excitement is just so great. So if you can visualize things ahead of time and in, you know, really embody that feeling that you want to have, and that can be apply that to anything. So say you've got a talk that you've got to present or an interview you're going into. How do you want that interview to go? How do you want to feel when you're sitting in the room having the interview? How do you want to feel when you walk out? Visualize it. Visualize the people sitting opposite you with their smiling faces. Visualize yourself being confident and making them laugh or whatever. And think about what you're going to wear. You know, just everything. And I think, yeah, visualization is so powerful. And I just didn't realize growing up that's what I was doing. But I definitely have always done that. And Natalie Pennicote Collier, who I've had on my podcast before, she's a wonderful mind coach. She describes it as the theater of our mind. And when she said that, I was just like, yes, that is what it is. Imagine this, like this trailer of a film. You can just imagine yourself. You're the lead character. You know, it's just, I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of a couple of things. So there were some studies in a similar light to the one that you described where the participants were taught a piano riff. And one half were told to practice regularly on an actual piano for a couple of weeks. And the other half of the intervention group were told to just visualize the riff and doing that for, again, the same time period. And the proficiency was the same across the group. So it demonstrates the power of your mind and the ability to visualize. And then another one, I think they did a similar experiment, whereas instead of using piano riffs, they actually did exercise. And this was the really weird thing, because those who exercised versus those who visualized themselves exercising had the same outcome when it came to exercise and aerobic capability afterwards. And that was just really weird. I don't know if it's been repeated. And have you heard that?
I've heard that exact one. And again, for someone who, you know, worked in the fitness and wellness industry for 10 years, and yeah. I don't think anyone would believe it if you said visualize yourself doing deadlifts and bicep curls and your muscles and your, as you say, your the metrics are actually going to change. But yeah, I heard that too, and I listened to the stats around it, and it is mind-blowing. And again, because I'd heard this before about, so I used to be a professional dancer. So if anyone listening who doesn't know that, I used to be a professional dancer, and I, you know, performed in the West End back in the day. And actually, because I've done years and years and years of ballet and dance training, I also heard that same thing, that if you watch something that you've done, so for example, if you're a tennis player watching tennis or a ballerina watching ballet, then actually the same thing, something to do with the brain and your muscle memory, you're kind of burning calories just by watching a ballet, because your body remembers. It's so strange, so fascinating. Yeah. Actually,
yeah, yeah. And I think there's so many different ways in which you can use this as a tool in daily life, right? So as an example, I had to have an uncomfortable conversation with someone, and it, you know, it wasn't like a shouting match, but it was certainly something that I needed to raise. And I'm the your typical person who just avoids conflict. I'm very passive. I just, you know, try not to make a fuss, kind of British. And whenever I get into not an argument, but just a heated debate or discussion, my heart rate goes up, I get sweaty, I stumble on my words. And I thought, you know, going into this, I'm just going to try and think about how I would like to act. I would like to slow down my words. I would like to be very patient. I would like to be very, you know, pragmatic in the words and the vernacular that I use. And I kid you not, Adrian, honestly, I was exactly that. And it was a very amicable conversation. And I didn't, you know, have the jitters afterwards. I just think, you know, yes, that's a way of visualizing. That's the power of mindset, because you can create the character that you want that serves you the best. And I think, you know, your work in that with the book is really inspirational.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, like I say, I didn't probably understand the nuances of it and certainly the science of it growing up. But I think in the last few years, as maybe because I was interested in it myself, but also because I do speak to so many people, I don't want to just give my opinion and go, this is what I think. So I think over the last few years, spending so much time reading books, listening to podcasts, watching talks, you know, even research papers, you know, I read a lot of papers in research for my book. And I think the more you can learn the science behind something and see data and actually see, you know, because I think it's really important, lived experience and, you know, having your own lived experience, sometimes that can be more powerful in a way than just being told the science. But for me, I'm quite a data person. So it almost like, I'm always like, I want a bit of proof. I want something to back up what I'm thinking, what I'm saying, what I'm doing, because it gives you more confidence. It gives me more confidence to think, actually, it's not just a placebo that I'm telling myself. It's actually, there's science behind this as well.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know, the placebo effect appears to be getting stronger and stronger by the day. So there's definitely something in some of these treatments that we've kind of, you know, put at the wayside, but definitely on a personal level, it can certainly help. You talk quite a bit at the intro about your experience, which was a really personal experience, and I, you know, really commend you for talking about it, around IVF and, you know, trying for your second child and stuff. Can you tell us a bit more about that and how, you know, some of the things that you've eventually written in the book might have helped you through that period?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I did go through IVF treatment, and it was certainly not, you know, a quick decision. It was actually kind of what felt at the time like a last resort. You know, for anyone who's trying to conceive, you will read everything, you'll be told everything, you know, do acupuncture, drink this tea, stand on your head, all these things that are going to get you pregnant. But often, you know, there's complex issues as to why sometimes people can't get pregnant. Sometimes it's issues with the female, sometimes it's issues with the male. I don't feel like that's very talked about very often, but you know, for me and also for friends, when the issue is with the male, again, there's all these different layers and it's very complex for relationships about, you know, it's very complex. But the situation that we were in, it was like, okay, IVF was, yeah, as I say, a last resort. And so, yeah, we did the treatment, and the treatment is difficult. You know, it's really difficult. And as someone who is very in tune with my body, it didn't feel great to have to inject different hormones into my body and have all these different procedures. But when you have a real motivation, you know, heart's desire, I really wanted to have another child and for my son to have a sibling. I kind of felt like, you know what, I'll do anything, to be honest. So did the treatment and I was so optimistic going into that. So we talk about mindset and visualization. I was just telling the doctors, this is going to work. Listen to me. Of course it's going to work. You know, I'm young, I'm healthy. My eggs are good. Just bring it on. And people would say, you know, again, don't get your hopes up, Adrienne. These are the, you know, these are the things that could happen. Could I was like, yeah. It's going to work. It's going to be great. Because it was the only way that I could go through, like I say, those procedures and going in and having all these, you know, it's hard. It's some of the procedures are uncomfortable and painful and just, you know, I had to tell myself, this is going to be worth it when I have that baby. It's going to be worth it. And I did fall pregnant, which was of course great because I told them it was going to work. So of course it did. And then I was just really, happy and excited. And I just, honestly, I could pretty much visualize the child's face. You know, I had a list of names. I love children. I love being a mother. So it was so exciting to me to think about having a big belly again and pushing a pram again. But unfortunately, you know, a few weeks later, it all came to an end because I had a miscarriage. And again, so many women have miscarriages. And I think because of that, sometimes people just go, oh, miscarriage. Yeah, it's common, isn't it? And it's just like moving on. You know, it's like saying you had a headache. It's like, miscarriage. Yes, it is a common thing, but it doesn't mean that it's any less impactful or traumatic or disappointing or heartbreaking. So for me, that was just, oh my gosh, like, you know, talk about a rock bottom. I was just like, I didn't expect it, actually. I didn't allow myself to even think that that could happen, which maybe was naive, but it happened. And yeah, it's a really difficult and traumatic thing to experience. But again, you know, I wouldn't say I just shrugged it off. You know, I'm not a robot, I'm a human. But I think within a matter of maybe hours, certainly by the next day, again, I kind of thought, I'm feeling this way, but I have my son, I have my health. You know, it was September and I was like, it's really sunny. I'm not going to stay indoor. Like my sister called me. She was like, she was really worried, you know, thinking, oh no, how is she going to, she knew how much I wanted it, you know? And actually I was like, you know, I'm just getting Jude on his scooter. We're going to the park. And she was like, are you like, okay. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, I am, I wouldn't have chosen it, of course, but it's for whatever reason that happened, you know? And so, yeah, as you say, I do talk about it a little bit in the introduction of the book, just because I think, to be honest, I wrote that. I didn't even know if it was going to go into the book or where it would go, but I just sat down and wrote it. And I thought, often people will ask me, they're like, oh, Adrienne, you know, you're so happy, you're so optimistic, you're so full of energy all the time. Like, your life must just be great. You know, you must just be, everything must be great all the time. And, you know, nobody's life is perfect. Nobody's life's great all the time. I've certainly had my fair share of challenges. And I think that's the human experience. I don't know a single person who can say they've never experienced heartache or loss or grief or something that they've just felt like just pulled the rug from underneath their feet, you know? So I shared that and just really to say to people that, yeah, we all have it. Everyone's is different. Everyone's story, it's just a part of it. It doesn't have to define it, but I'm human, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, the shared experience that we're all having with the pandemic as well, this sort of feeling of loss and, you know, lack of connection is making everyone realize just how almost uniform our experience is. We're all going to have this issue. And it just so happens that we're collectively experiencing it at the same time. But that's not to say if there wasn't a pandemic, at this moment, people wouldn't be having those at different timelines. It reminds me of a conversation I recently had with Mo Gowda, who lost his son in 2014, the routine appendix operation. And his whole formula was around happiness and how, you know, we should expect bad things to happen. And it's the only thing that we can have control over is our perception of life. And our perception is very much in our control. So it's, you know, the exterior, we can always look happy, we can appear that, but really it's the interior and it's stuff that you go into in your book and stuff that I think really, really counts for it. With that in mind, let's go into the power hour concept because as you know, I'm a big fan of starting your hour, owning that period in your day, which is just for you. Talk me through it, and how you started the pod as well.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so the concept of the Power Hour, for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, it's essentially about the first hour of your day, so your morning routine. And essentially for me, it's about reclaiming your time. So there are so many demands on our time now, from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed. You know, we're busy people, you know, it's emails, WhatsApp messages, kids, errands, work, we're connected, we're on demand, we're on the go all the time. And often, if you open your eyes now and you wake up in the morning and you just go straight into it, straight into the world, you know, it's a lot. And so this really started for me about 5 years ago, when I said yes to running my first ever marathon. My son was five. I was working. I was, you know, training people one-to-one. I was training clients. I was also writing. I'd started writing for publications, and I was, you know, juggling. And I was like, okay, how am I going to find more hours in the day? Because now I need to train for this race. I'd never done an endurance event before. So when I looked at the plan and I saw some of the runs are like 90 minutes or 1 hour and 45, I was thinking, 90 minutes, this is going to take some time. And I didn't have time, you know, everyone's time poor. So I started getting up 1 hour earlier every single day, 1 hour before my son woke up, simple as that, to give myself an hour, whether it was to run or to stretch or to do whatever I needed to do. And I've kept doing it for 5 years. So you can imagine, I now know, I believe I know how to get the best out of that 1 hour, what to do, what not to do, what to avoid, you know, things that I know set me up for the day and make me feel the way I want to feel for the rest of the day, or things that knock me off in the morning. And then I'm like, oh, now I'm on the back foot. So I've really kind of spent a lot of time, as you know, that's what led me on to starting the podcast, because I then thought, well, I'm not the only person who has a morning routine. I'm not the only person who, you know, really had a big impact on my life, actually, from my relationships to my motivation, to my career, to my, just everything started to change, really. And I'd listened to a lot of other audiobooks, actually, that mentioned high performing people and their morning routines and how powerful it is. So I thought, well, I can't be the only person. I'm going to find out, what do these other people do? You know, friends, people like yourself, people who I knew and respected. And I was like, what are they doing? Because they're, you know, doing amazing things in the world. What do they do when they wake up in the morning? What do they do with the first hour of their day? And actually, what motivates them to get out of bed every day? You know, more than just that 1 hour. If you think about your whole life, you know, obviously, what is it made up of? Years. What is that made up of? Months, weeks, days, hours. It's this concept of time. And I'm so aware of it for lots of reasons. And I live my life with a sense of urgency, because time is finite and we're going to experience this life once. And as I said, growing up, I didn't have, you know, the opportunities. I didn't have a passport. I didn't travel. I didn't go on holidays. We didn't have money. We didn't have stuff. You know, I didn't have one-to-one piano lessons or a tutor, or I didn't have it. And I think I grew up thinking, I'm going to get whatever it is, you know, whatever I need, whatever I want, I'm going to work for it. I'm going to make it happen. And so often when I think, maybe again, it's just this desire to kind of to make things happen for yourself, but it takes time and you're never going to have more time. You know, people say to me, oh, Adrienne, you know, I felt really motivated by what you said. And one day, you know, I'm going to do this. One day I'm going to run a marathon, or one day I am going to start a new business, or I'm going to leave my husband, or I'm going to lose weight, or whatever the thing. But it's one day, one day, one day. Yeah. And I'm just like, too often tomorrow stays tomorrow. So I want to say to people, if one day was today, what would you do? When you wake up in the morning, when you put your feet on the floor, what are you excited about? What do you want to do today? You know, having a sense of urgency and saying, you know what, bringing it back to the question, which is, what is the Power Hour and why do I do it? It ultimately, I'm reclaiming my time. I'm taking that hour, and whatever I choose to do, whether I'm going for a run, whether I'm journaling, whether I'm reading, I'm reminding myself that my time is my time to, you know, our schedule. And it's not selfish. It's not self-indulgent. It is necessary for us to set some boundaries and reclaim time, because you won't ever have time otherwise. Your life's just going to be busy, busy, busy. And what are we being busy for, you know?
I remember before I sort of developed my own hour routine in the morning, that was quite gradual. And I'd like to talk about actually how you start doing it, for if you're a complete newbie to this concept. But I look back and I was like, constant barrage immediately. As you wake up, you have the alarm going off, you have your WhatsApp messages, because we're all connected globally now. And I'm lucky to have friends across the globe, like from my friends in Australia. So obviously they're in a different time zone, and then you get WhatsApp messages from them, and then you notice some emails that you didn't get back to, and it's ping, ping, ping all of a sudden. And then all of, you know, you're just straight in there. You're not really thinking about your day. And then at the end of the day, you're like, what on earth happened? It's just like this. And then obviously that's before you get into social media and the news as well.
And so that's before your kids wake up and you have to pack the school bag, make the packed lunch, give them breakfast, do whatever they need.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I don't know about the kids. I've got a little puppy who needs to go toileting. We need to give her breakfast and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes you pack her off to puppy preschool. But other than that, no, I'm pretty lucky in that respect, actually. But yeah, so I guess, like, how do you stop? Because I think everyone, particularly after, you know, listening to us talk, and when you recognize a whole bunch of productive and successful, quote unquote, people have got their power hour routine, like, how do you even start? Because the thought of people waking up an hour earlier is probably very scary.
Yeah, okay. Where to start? So, depending on who you are, your personality, what your goal is, what kind of things you like. You probably know if you've tried things before, whether it's starting a new habit, whether it's starting a new New Year's resolution, whatever. We know the times we've set ourselves up and we've the barriers, what have stopped us from achieving those goals. So if you're an all or nothing person, I am very much that, then you might decide, you know what, I'm doing the whole hour. I'm starting tomorrow and that's what I'm doing. And you just jump in with 2 feet because you embrace it. It's like a switch, goes on. And some people can do that. For other people, they need micro steps, and it's not, one isn't better than the other. So if you know you're someone who, like, hang on, let me just gradually do 15 minutes. I'm going to get up 15 minutes earlier. Then after a week, maybe I'm going to make it 30 minutes. You know, that's one entry into the power hour, is to think, let me just start slowly and gradually. Another way is to go, maybe I don't do this every single day, because maybe that is just a little bit too much right now. Maybe I'm just going to say, on Wednesday, I'm going to get up early and actually plan what you're going to do. Don't wait until the morning to decide, because, you know, decision fatigue, you're going to be still tired, half asleep. You don't want to be trying to decide, what am I going to do? Am I going to go for a run? Am I going to do a workout? Am I going to read? Plan before what you're going to use that time to do. And then maybe it's just once a week. Maybe you just start off every Wednesday is my power hour day, and you get up earlier. So find a different way in, but definitely, as I say, plan what you're going to do in that hour. And if you need to, you know, if you don't live alone, if you live with flatmates or a partner, maybe you need to let them know as well and communicate with them. Say, look, this is really important to me. This is what I'm doing. I'm going to go to bed early tonight because tomorrow morning I want to get up and do some yoga. Or I want to, you know, take the dog for a walk on my own and listen to a podcast. So it's just let them know, this is important. Please don't, you know, please support me in this. Please don't sabotage me and say, oh, come on, have a glass of wine, or, you know, hit snooze, stay in bed. Because that's what people say to me now. They're like, I've read the book and I want to do this, but my partner doesn't want to do it. You don't have to do it together, but just let them know that it's important to you and let them know that that's what you're going to be doing.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, that the communicating it to the rest of the members of your household, that this is important and you're going to try it. And even if it is an experiment that you do once a week, I think that's a really good point, because most people would think that you'd have to do something every single day, when actually, if you're just, again, taking agency and taking control of the situation, you do the bare minimum that you think you can do, where you can commit to it. I think that's really, really important. And for me, so people are pretty horrified when I tell them that I wake up at 5 in the morning. Well, actually, it's 4:55, because I want to start at 5 and I do, like, you know, daily hygiene and all the rest of it before I get started. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be that early. It doesn't have to be 6 or whatever. It can be just whenever it suits you. But first thing in the morning, there's something special about that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because people will ask me that. They say, can I just take all the principles that you're talking about and just do that at lunch, you know, or do that before I go to bed? And although, of course, I'm sure there is some merit in doing it, that you're right, there's something special about the morning. There's a couple of things. One is the solitude. You know, we as humans, we do need solitude sometimes. And as you mentioned, being connected all the time, whether it's online or not, it's still a feeling of obligation that people are expecting you to be available for them and that you need to get back to them or you need to be, you know, available. Whereas in the morning, that solitude, I find that hard to cultivate at any other time in the day, because especially as a parent. So there is definitely a special feeling, like, you know, if I'm running in the morning, especially at the moment I go out, it's just about starting to get light. It might be a bit dark, but by the time I'm halfway through my run and by the time I get back to my front door, you know, the sky is orange or pink, or, you know, it's bright. And I feel like the roads are empty. You know, there's no traffic. There's no waiting at the traffic lights. There's no dog walkers. I just have the whole, you know, it feels like the whole world is sleeping and I'm just out there doing my thing. And again, solitude for me, I'm someone who's very easily distracted, Rupi. So when I was writing that book, I would get up early and literally go to the kitchen table and just start. And I do more sometimes in the first 90 minutes or 2 hours than I would for the whole morning, because there was solitude. There was no temptation to even look at my phone because no one's messaging me because they're asleep.
Yeah, exactly. And I find that sense of peace in the morning, which is when, you know, you don't get that during the day, even the evenings at all. And I mean, in my power, I'm going to ask you about your power hour in a second. But in my power hour, which I described at length on your pod, it's basically set into three different things. It's very similar to what Robin Sharma talks about in his 5 a.m. club, but which I highly recommend. I think it's one of the best books that I've read. It's split into three different things where you have your meditation, your exercise, and your journaling. And I was always a bit of a journaling skeptic, but I've been doing it religiously for the past 3 months now. And I can honestly say it's definitely reframed a lot of the negative thoughts I have had during the day just by doing that thing in the morning. And it's just, it's almost like expressive writing. Like, you know, I do my gratitude, I do my positive thoughts as to how I want the day to go. But I also talk about, you know, what's on my mind, what my ruminations are, what's annoying me, as well as all the positive stuff as well. And it's great. So what do you do? Tell me about the sections of your power hour.
Yes. Well, as I said, as someone who's easily distracted, I tend to just do one thing. So what I do will change. The consistent thing is having the time, the 1 hour, but I don't tend to split it up, because I talk about in the last chapter of the book, how you can split it up. You might do 30-30, you might do 20-20-20, but for me, it works best. And I've tried them all. It works best for me to do one thing in isolation for 1 hour. But before I dive into what I'm doing right now, I'm just going to touch on what you said about journaling, because I too was a skeptic when it came to journaling. I was kind of like, oh, I just felt like a dear diary kind of thing. I was like, that is not for me. It's not my vibe. I don't want to do that. Why? Everyone's telling me to journal. But eventually, again, I guess in the spirit of research, I was like, let me just try it. I'm open-minded. So I will begrudgingly journal. But actually what I found really helpful, because of just knowing who I am and I'm such a like goal oriented person, I had been listening to a lot of Jim Quick's work around the brain and about memory and about cognition and about dominant questions. And essentially he was talking about, if you give someone a short story, so one page of text, and they read the text, and then you give them 5 questions to answer about the text, you're not going to be able to recall as much information. Your memory won't be as good as if I gave you the 5 questions first and then gave you the short story. Because when you scan the story, you're looking for the answers. Mm. So I apply that now. And so what I now do, and I've shared this in the book, is I have an exercise called 6 questions to answer before 6. So I wrote down 6 questions, my dominant questions, and then I answer them. And then throughout the day, I am looking for those answers because I've written it down in the morning. And because I'm not, as I said, I wasn't journaling, I just felt like, well, where do I start? What am I going to write about? It just gives me those prompts. So some examples are, what is one thing that I could do today to take me closer to where I want to be 1 year from now? And it can sometimes be one word. Sometimes it could be email this person. Sometimes I write a whole page. Another question I have on there is, who would love to hear from me today? Or who could I help today? or who could I learn from today? And often, again, it could be a TED talk, it could be a podcast, it could be a friend actually calling someone up and saying, you know what, can you introduce me to this person, or could you help me out with this? So there's those questions. Obviously, I have, you know, what am I most grateful for today? That is always on there. Sometimes I have, what am I most looking forward to today? Sometimes I have, what have I been putting off that I could complete today? You know, and so seeing it in black and white, it forces me to be intentional, and I have to write an answer. And then if the next day I haven't done it, I'm seeing that question again, you know, it's like a prompt. So the six questions before six, that was a game changer for me. I did it consistently for about 4 months. And I just, even looking back now, actually, it's really interesting to see what I was writing about and to really appreciate that time. But now, what am I doing right now in my power hour? It's definitely different at the moment with, you know, the pandemic and everything. But recently I've been getting up, I've been doing a lot of Pilates. I'm just a little bit on this, like, again, I talked about phases, right? And kind of having stages and seasons in your life. This is my Pilates season. I am loving it. I'm just like, it's just keeping me toned and tight and right. I'm like, this is great. So I'm doing a lot of Pilates. Also because I'm a runner, and at the moment I'm working, training for my first race in 18 months. I'm going to be doing, in May, I'm doing a half marathon, but I'm trying to run a PB this year. So the Pilates is also helping core strength, which is going to help speed work. So doing a lot of Pilates at the moment in the morning. I come downstairs, everything's ready. My mat's there. I've got a little speaker and sometimes headphones. And I just, do my Pilates, stretch a little bit. And then often Jude now, he wakes my son, he's 9 and a half. So he now wakes up and comes down, and he knows, like, if I'm doing Pilates, he's like, it's mommy's power hour. So he doesn't even interrupt, you know, he'll just pot around. He reads his book in the morning. And then the weekends at the moment, we read together. So we have this 1 hour of reading in the morning. So he'll come in the morning, he grabs his book. He's reading a really great book called Epic Zero. And I'm currently reading Think Again, Adam Grant. So we have them both there on the side. We do our 1 hour of reading Saturday and Sunday before we even get out of bed. So yeah, that's power hour, what it's looking like at the moment. But as I said, it changes, and it's usually movement, either running or training or doing the six questions. It has ebbs and flows, but the thing that remains the same, 5:30 to 6:30 every day.
Amazing. I'm sure there's loads of people listening who are like, oh my God, she is well trained, that child, to not disturb mummy in the morning and to read as well for an hour. That's amazing.
He loves reading. Honestly, this is not even from me. He's a bookworm. I think he gets his name from my sister. But he loves to read, and it's such a great thing because, honestly, I won't go into the whole thing with, you know, kids and parenting and homeschooling or whatever, but he doesn't love to sit down and write. You know, getting him to hold a pencil for an hour, that would be a challenge. But he's always loved to read. So when you talk about creative imagination and visualization, imagination is wild. It's amazing, actually. So he loves stories because of that, I suppose. He can really visualize the characters. He always reads superhero books. He's a little bit obsessed with superheroes and visualizing himself as a superhero. So yeah, but you know what, that said, children will give you your own medicine. So once, I can't even remember how old he was, maybe like 6, 7, I don't know. But he basically came into my room once in December with his advent calendar at like 4 a.m. And I was like, what is happening? I was really like disorientated. I was like, what's going on? It's pitch black. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, mummy, can I open my advent calendar? I said, what are you doing? It's like 4 o'clock in the morning. He's like, it's the power hour. I was like, get back to bed.
That's great. That's when it all blows back on you.
Right? I was like, what are you talking about, power hour? Get yourself to bed.
That's great. And I just want to pick up on one thing there that you said, and something that I do as well. It's the night before I put my mat out and stuff, or whatever equipment that I need to do my exercise. So it's that prompt. It's like, you've reduced those barriers so you can get to that. And it's it's just an easy thing. You're not going to press snooze. You're going to get up. Your mat's already there. You're just going to smash it out. One thing we haven't talked about is, and you do talk about it in the book, is sleep, right? So I struggle with sleep still. So I religiously measure my sleep using a tracking ring. I have experimented with everything you can imagine in terms of supplements for sleep and all these other things. And the big things for me are reducing caffeine in total, but B, also having it before 10:30 in the morning, if I choose to have caffeine that day at all in the form of a coffee. And the other thing is not watching TV in the evenings, particularly 2 hours before. And sorry, if I can add a third, it's not eating 2 to 3 hours before going to bed, if possible. It's not always possible, but those are the key things that I found to improve my sleep such that I can smash out the power hour in the morning. What kind of things have you found beneficial for you or from your guests on the podcast?
Yes. So, I mean, a lot of the things you mentioned already, so caffeine being a big one, sugar as well, sugar in the evening, and yeah, the blue screen. So being on your phone, looking at TV right up until the minute when people want to go to sleep. So some people will say to me that they're on their phone in bed because that's just what they're, you know, they're watching Instagram stories or they're tweeting, whatever. And then they just put the phone down next to the bed and try and close their eyes and go to sleep. So I'm sure a lot of people are like, yeah, that's me. Yeah. So one thing is that I leave my phone downstairs. So I used to plug it in the hall. Now it's actually downstairs in the kitchen. So don't even take my phone upstairs. So again, I'm just eliminating the temptation. Why am I going to make it harder for myself by having my phone on the floor and hearing that little zzz? That's going to tempt me. So instead, I just leave it in the kitchen. But other than that, you know, exercise and if you can, exercise outside. So that doesn't have to be running, or it could be walking, it could be cycling, but actually getting outside and getting natural daylight into your eye before midday. That, you know, helps with the circadian rhythm. It helps to wake up the body and tell your brain it's daytime, so that hopefully 12 hours later or 8 hours later, you're starting to get the melatonin release because now it's getting dark and it's time to sleep. So getting outside definitely helps. Also, I think the environment in which you sleep. So a couple of things. If you're fortunate enough to have, you know, a space in your house where you can make your bedroom kind of like a bit of a sanctuary, you know, like put some plants in there, get some really thick curtains or blind that makes your room super dark. Even in the summer, my room is so dark. Try not to have clutter and mess. And, you know, the thing is just tidying up your room and not feeling, because I'm busy and my mind is busy and I'm active and I'm thinking. If I have a lot of clutter or mess or like loads of stuff, basically, I just feel it just overwhelms me. So I need to have like clear walls. You know, I don't have loads of shelves and loads of stuff. I try to keep it kind of, yeah, plain actually. And as a result as well, I'm not seeing visual prompts. So again, if you've got work papers somewhere or things you need to do, your laptop, try to not have those things in your bedroom, because it almost gives you that reminder of, oh, I've got to email that person, or I've got that work to do. And that's not going to help you switch off in the evening. So as much as you can, try, if you can, you know, if you've got the luxury of having that space, try and make your bedroom as inviting as possible so that you actually want to go upstairs. You want to, you know, people always say, oh, but I want to stay up and watch this, or there's always temptation to stay up. The whole world is designed to tempt you to stay up, but sleep is so important. It really, really is. If I, you know, there's no way I could get up, do the power hour, do all the things that I want to do, train for endurance events, take, you know, spend time with my son, take him to school, do the homework, do my work. I could not do all the things on my big audacious to-do list if I didn't have the energy. You know, so many people were just sleep deprived zombies who are shattered, saying to me, Adrian, I love this idea, but there's no way I could get up early because I'm exhausted. And in reality, you know, going back to what we talked about at the start, we are going to experience this life once. And although people joke, oh, you can sleep when you're dead, actually, I don't want to sleepwalk, you know, just walk around like a zombie who's too tired to live my life. I want to live my life. I want to experience it. I want to feel good. So that's what gets me up to bed early. And yeah, I'm so boring. I go to bed now at like 9:45.
Yeah. I know. I'm one of those boring people as well. And then I've come across like a bit of kickback from patients as well about this. Like, you know, well, I want to go to bed early, but like my teenager's always up, or like, you know, my partner, or yada, yada. And I think almost like as a collective experiment, if it's possible for everyone in the household to go to sleep at the same time, or make a concerted effort to really try and get that 8 hours or however much more you can get, I think it's a really, really good sort of strategy for making it a bit more habitual. And I just want to end off with, you know, one of the things I think which is why your pod is so successful, is because we have this sort of like innate desire to like know what other people are doing. And I'm fascinated by the routines of like high performing people and celebrities. It's almost like this voyeuristic nature that we have. Yeah, like what are they doing? Like I was on Saturday Kitchen and like Matt Tebbutt, who's the host of Saturday Kitchen, he was like, I'm really liking some elements of lockdown, particularly when we have celebrity guests who zoom in and then we get to see what the kitchens look like.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You're right. Yeah, right. Because actually, yeah, some of the guests that I've interviewed, whether it's Olympic athletes or, you know, celebrities, as you mentioned, it is really fascinating when I say to them, I'm like, okay, so what's the first hour of your day? And sometimes it's surprising, right? I'm sure you've I'll give you some examples. So one was Trevor Nelson. So Trevor Nelson, you know, I grew up watching him on TV. And
totally.
You know, I was like, I was so nervous and excited to interview him. And obviously he's a DJ and his life is very nocturnal. So I really was like, is he going to like the power hour? Like, what's he going to say? And Cotton, she talked about the fact that her morning, she was like, it's chaos. She was like, there's cats, I'm doing yoga, there's kids, there's pancakes. She said, it's just kind of chaotic and messy, but we just go with the flow. And Tom Daly, he said that he crochets. He crochets and he knits. He crochets
really?
Jumpers. And that's his mindful thing in the morning, because he's, you know, as someone who's been training for multiple Olympics throughout his life since he was a child, you realize that he was in year 8 at school. So that's like 13 or 14 when he went to the Beijing Olympics.
He was that young.
Yeah. So he's someone who's big on visualization. He visualized the 2020 Olympic medal. He visualized it and drew a picture of it. Anyway, he crochets and knits. So I don't think people are expecting to hear him say that's what he does.
I've got to listen to that episode. Wow.
Yeah, it's cool.
Well, thank you so much, Adrian. Honestly, I just think, you know, your work is brilliant. The pod's awesome. I've got a few more episodes that I've got to listen back to now. But thank you so much for your time today. And yeah, keep smashing those power hour goals.
Thank you so much for having me, Rupi. I've really enjoyed this conversation and I can't wait to reconnect, hopefully in real life soon.
Definitely. We'll have to go for a run. You'll probably outrun me.
You can go for a run. And you know what? I know you're modest, so you're going to be embarrassed, but you know when you were meant talking before earlier saying about the labels, the academic one and this and that. My mum is a big fan of you, Rupi. She has the cookbooks. And do you know what she would call you? The sexy one. She's like, the sexy doctor, the sexy doctor. You're not the academic one to her, you're the sexy one. So there you go, you got a new label.
I was definitely not that at school, for sure. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast this week. You can find The Power Hour in all good bookstores. Check out the show notes on thedoctorskitchen.com and do subscribe to the newsletter where we give weekly recipes and lifestyle related content and tips to your inbox once a week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.